The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
In Halifax, Winnipeg, and Kingston, and their goal is to expand the organization nationwide, I want to congratulate these CPLN students on this initiative and thank them for the great work they're doing.
Thank you very much. Time allotted for member statements has almost expired. The House will now recess for a few seconds while we're ready for a question period. Order, please. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday I asked the Premier how much Nova Scotia taxpayers are going to have to pay to, believe it or not, upgrade the waterfront terminal in Portland, Maine. The Premier didn't answer that question, so I'm going to try a simple question, that simple question again today. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier how much are Nova Scotia taxpayers going to pay to upgrade the terminal in Portland, Maine.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank the Minister of Transportation for tremendous work he's been doing on behalf of the citizens of Nova Scotia to ensure that we have that international link. Working with our partner, a longstanding partner that's worked with successive governments in the Province Bay Ferries, we're looking forward to that connection starting. We're looking forward to welcoming American visitors, and we're looking forward, Mr. Speaker, for a tourism season that will surpass last year's positive season.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, I see we're no farther ahead today in getting that answer, Mr. Speaker. Nobody's looking forward to the season more than the people of Portland, Maine, because their downtown is going to get upgraded at the expense of the taxpayers of Nova Scotia. This government's learned nothing, Mr. Speaker, from the last bad ferry deal they signed, an even worse one. And I'll give you an example, Mr. Speaker. The list of eligible expenses that the taxpayers are going to be expected to cover includes the winter layup costs for the new boat, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask the Premier why he expects the taxpayers of Nova Scotia to pay for a boat for 12 months when we only get 4 months of service.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question again. I want to thank Bay Ferries for working with the province. Mr. Speaker, they've operated that ferry service for a number of decades before the changes that took place in 2009, 10, 11. Mr. Speaker, they do a tremendous job operating the ferry from Digby to St. John's. We're continuing to look forward to them. We're continuing to see a positive season of tourism across the province. I want to thank those tourism operators who continue to stick with the government to make sure that we continue to drive the economy, not only in southwestern Nova Scotia, but indeed across the country. And furthermore, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank them for having the courage to invest in their tourism operations so that when those American visitors come, they can continue to see not only the general beauty of this province, but to see top-quality accommodations.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, I guess, Mr. Speaker, the taxpayers are just supposed to pay. Premier would even tell them how much. They're just an open checkbook, as far as he's concerned, as long as it saves the seat in Yarmouth, Mr. Speaker. Let's just call it what it is. Taxpayers have to pay. Won't even answer the question how much, Mr. Speaker. What kind of deal is that? It's a very bad deal. You know what else that taxpayers have to pay for, Mr. Speaker? From that same list, we have to pay for the terminal wages at both ends of the route, Portland and Yarmouth. Both ends, Mr. Speaker. We have to pay for office printers for the company, Mr. Speaker. Tax advice for the private company that's going to run the route. The taxpayers of Nova Scotia have to pay for their tax advice, Mr. Speaker. Even currency exchange rates are paid for, Mr. Speaker. It's very obvious what the taxpayers are expected to pay because of this bad deal. I'd like to ask the Premier, what does Bay Ferries have to pay for?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I want to thank the Honourable Member for his question. Again, I want to thank Bay Ferries for continuing to work with the government, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that we welcome our American tourists, our American friends to come here to enjoy the beauty of this province, enjoy the accommodations that are across the province. I want to correct the Honourable Member. This ferry service is not that of Yarmouth. It's indeed the Nova Scotia Ferry Service. And I also want to tell the Honourable Member that the Member from Yarmouth, Mr. Speaker, lives in his ridings, works and plays with the members that he represents, and he knows how to represent them. And they, quite frankly, have all the confidence in the world as I do in that member.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier has some explaining to do about the great disparity between the December forecast update and the numbers presented to us in this budget. In December, we were told the total departmental expenses would be $4.4 million over budget. Just a few short months later, the budget revealed that, in fact, departmental expenses were $59.5 million underspent. Unbelievable. I asked the Premier, why is there a $65 million discrepancy for departmental expenses between the December forecast update and the budget?
The Honourable Premier.
I'm not sure what the Honourable Member is looking for. Should we aspire to be overspent? I'm not sure what her question is, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Okay. Mr. Speaker, when you compare the recent budget numbers with the December forecast update, it is hard to believe your eyes. In December, we were told that the Department of Health and Wellness was forecasted to be $3.7 million over budget. Then, in the blink of an eye, Mr. Speaker, we are told in the budget that the department was, in fact, $23.8 million under budget. Unbelievable. I asked the Premier, why is there a $26.5 million discrepancy in the health budget between December and April?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Indeed, I want to thank all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, who over the last number of years has worked with our government, who have had to accept, Mr. Speaker, work with us to make difficult choices in the short term so that the long-term financial stability of this province, so that we can invest in the things that Nova Scotians want for them and their families, like childcare, Mr. Speaker, investing in classrooms, Mr. Speaker, continuing to provide services that I believe respect the values of Nova Scotia, and we're going to continue to do so.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Can we change question period to question and answer period? Yeah. It is painfully obvious that the Premier and his government are playing short-term politics with this budget. Back in December, when they were seeking a public sector wage pattern, they wanted us to believe that the province was in dire financial straits. Now, just a few months later, in preparation for an election, they want Nova Scotians to believe that they have balanced the budget. It is unbelievable. I ask the Premier, given the conflicting stories his government has been telling Nova Scotians in recent months, why should we believe this is a balanced budget?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, I'm enjoying her enthusiasm today. Mr. Speaker, I want to tell you this has been a challenge for all Nova Scotians. To help the government get back to a base of fiscal balance. We had a very difficult 4 years under the NDP government that cost us dearly, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians have recognized that there was a price to pay for electing a new Democratic Party, and they've continued to work for us. Speaker, they've continued to work with our government to move forward. I'm very proud of the surplus that we have that is before this House that's being debated, Mr. Speaker. I don't think anyone in the province should be popping champagne corks. There's lots of work to do. There's a lot of difficult decisions to continue to be made, Mr. Speaker, but we're going to continue to manage this province in the best interest of all Nova Scotians, not a select few.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, by now we've all learned you have to read government press releases with a grain of salt. Certainly our seniors in the PharmaCare program learned that earlier this year. Now it turns out you have to read the budget address with the same grain of salt, Mr. Speaker. The government patted itself on the back for spending $271 million this year on mental health. What they didn't tell us was that's no more money than last year, Mr. Speaker. In fact, it's a 0.4% increase, and that's after accounting for the new EIVI program, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask the Premier, why not just be upfront with Nova Scotians and tell them that there's no new funding for mental health in the budget?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I'm very proud of the fact that I continue to have a conversation with Nova Scotians, being direct and honest about the challenges this province faces. And I want to continue to thank them for working with our government to continue to try to provide the service across this province. I want to thank the Minister of Health for working with community organizations and communities across this province to provide support metrics for those families that require assistance. Thank the Minister of Education for the tremendous work that's taking place in our education system across this province, early identification, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank all members of all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, continue to believe in our government and continue to work with us so that we continue to move this province forward.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Oh, Mr. Speaker, we are so far beyond the time to just have a conversation about mental health. Mr. Speaker, there are real needs out there. It's not just a budget, these are lives. Mr. Speaker, we have people that go to the emergency room and then get sent home because they can't deal with them. We have people that call the crisis line when they're in crisis, Mr. Speaker, and they're told they have to wait 3 months to see a psychologist. We're far past time for conversations. Nova Scotians want to see real action in mental health care, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Premier, why didn't his government make mental health service a bigger priority in this budget?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to continue to encourage him to continue the debate and read the document. I think the Minister of Health is up today. He'll be able to explain during budget estimates the investments we've made in the Department of Health. I know the Minister of Education was up in the Red Chamber talking about the great investments we did in early intervention, Mr. Speaker, and the work we're doing in our education system for early identification of mental health issues, working with clinicians across this province, Mr. Speaker, the experts, and how we deliver mental health services to this province. This is not a question of standing still, Mr. Speaker. This is delivering supports for families, and we're going to continue to work with our clinicians and families across this province to ensure they get the supports they need.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, we know that the Department of Community Services has suspended the use of all hair strand drug testing in child protection cases because it has been proven to be unreliable. We also know that the department has refused to open up closed cases where this same testing was used. Mr. Speaker, Ontario and New Brunswick have already begun the review of closed cases. Nova Scotia stands alone in our refusal to automatically review cases that use this unreliable testing. Mr. Speaker, does the Minister of Justice believe that it is just and acceptable to not automatically review cases where unreliable testing methods were used?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
She's not here. Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Our Minister of Community Services would be better able to answer that question, I believe, today on the issue. The question has been asked, and I'd like to hear her second question. Thank you.
Jeff. The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
With all due respect, Mr. Speaker, it is clearly a justice issue when we are looking into reviewing cases, court cases. Mr. Speaker, yesterday during question period, the Minister of Community Services stated that hair strand testing is never the lone reason a child should be taken into care, and I will table that. That may be true about temporary care and custody orders, but not in case in terms of a permanent care and custody order. In my experience as a child welfare legal aid lawyer, I am aware of hair strand testing results being the determining factor in the final stage of a child welfare proceeding. Mr. Speaker, given that this hair strand testing actually can be a contributing factor in a permanent care and custody order, will the Minister of Justice commit today to a review of all child welfare cases that use faulty drug testing?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think it was important to note what the minister said yesterday, that this is just one of the contributing circumstances that have been used in the child custody cases. So it's not the only one, or even perhaps the definitive one. It is one of a series of them. And I think that as we go forward, we'll be working closely with the Department of Community Services to consider if there is any need for further review.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Environment. In early March, the province ordered the owners of a construction and demolition waste disposal site in Kings County to remove the banned materials. Less than 2 weeks later, the Kentville Volunteer Fire Department was called to the site to put out a massive fire. The Volunteer Fire Department has since been saddled with the bill for putting this fire out, which is reportedly in excess of $40,000. The Department of Environment has informed them that they have no intention to pay this or cover this bill, and I will table that, Mr. Speaker. My question for the minister is this. Has the minister been made aware of this, and has she considered the impact such a bill would have on a volunteer fire department whose only job was to protect residents and extinguish the fire?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. Actually, I'm very much aware of the situation, what's going on in Kings County. My inspectors were on site for quite a while and working with the fire marshal's office. It would be the fire marshal that would determine that my inspectors instructed that the fire had to be brought under control, or the site needed to be within compliance. As to that, further than that, it's up to we have a polluter pay policy. It's up to the property owner to look after the cost of the fire service.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, volunteer fire departments are struggling as it is to keep members and funding together. This fire was not the fault of any volunteer agency, and as the Minister pointed out 2 weeks ago, her department was in charge of monitoring and inspecting the site going forward. My question for the Minister is this. Will the Minister meet directly with the Kentville Volunteer Fire Department and settle this issue so as not to unfairly impact this department?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
And thank the member opposite for the question again. Certainly, this is something we're very much aware of, and certainly recognize that volunteer fire departments provide a valuable service in our community. But if there's a fire in my property where I live, I'm responsible for the cost associated with that, or your insurance company is. You don't leave it up to a government department to look after that. Even though the Department of Environment officers, we were there to monitor the site, to see the progress that was taking place, but it's not up to a government department, not up to the taxpayers of this province to foot the bill for a fire in a private enterprise. Also, we would certainly be willing to meet with anybody to discuss anything and to bring our message forward.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Association of Psychologists of Nova Scotia brought forward an idea to help more people access mental health services. So my question is to the Minister of Health. But yesterday, the member for Cumberland North called the idea an accounting solution that, quote, misses the point. And I will table that from Hansard. So, Mr. Speaker, to the minister, who is the minister siding with? The member for Cumberland North or the mental health professionals who want to help more people than they can help today?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure in terms of the bill per se, but I've met with the Psychologists Association of the province to take a look at the work they do in the province, the important role that they play to make sure that their students get out for their work terms across the province, and I need to take a further look in terms of how the bill could improve any service.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the member for Cumberland North, unfortunately yesterday, took aim at a group of dedicated mental health professionals who sincerely want to help Nova Scotians and improve our broken system. When will the minister stop taking policy advice from the member for Cumberland North and start listening to the strong, aware, competent professionals who work in the system?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I just met with many people from the counseling therapists to psychologists to psychiatrists to our school counselors at the McCormick Academic Day. And I certainly took that occasion to applaud the tremendous work that they do right across the province. The work that the advisory group did in implementing the Together We Can strategy. We have a lot of tremendous work going on to improve the mental health of Nova Scotians from early years to senior years.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Speaker, a question for the Minister of Energy. I asked Minister of Business yesterday. He recommended asking Minister of Energy. In October, the United States International Trade Commission upheld a Department of Commerce decision to charge tariffs on imports for Port Hawkesbury paper. Port Hawkesbury Papers indicated they are going to file an appeal under the North American Free Trade Agreement. Now, we've heard the government is going to be supportive of that. That is good to hear. Can the minister update the House, respecting any needs for confidentiality, of this appeal and how the government is assisting Port Hawkesbury Paper?
The Honourable Minister of Trade.
Speaker, I'd like to refer this to the Minister of Business. No, I'm not. I'm just joking. No, I want to thank the Mayor for the question. We've been working very closely with Port Hawkesbury Paper and very closely with our federal government. If you look back at the time frame of this, prior to the federal election, we were urging our federal counterparts to start the World Trade Organization process. Unfortunately, that fell on deaf ears, and we're a bit behind because of that. Once the new government was elected, Minister Freeland, at the earliest opportunity, started the appeal process through the World Trade Organization. We have retained our own legal counsel on behalf of the province of Nova Scotia. We are working in lockstep with Port Hawkesbury Paper to convince the World Trade Organization and our American counterparts that this duty is unfair and that it should be removed at the earliest opportunity.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, lucky for us, the low Canadian dollar is helping to offset the impact of the tariff. The U.S. ruling concern centers on the cost of energy and a feeling that they have that energy is being subsidized for the mill in Point Tupper. But, Mr. Speaker, we know that we have some of the highest energy costs in North America. That is not difficult to prove. So I'm sure that there is a possibility that this can all be settled positively for Port Hawkesbury Paper and the many people who work there. How does the minister feel about Port Hawkesbury Paper's chances under NAFTA? And perhaps he could also expand upon that and let us know what his thoughts are with the U.S. presidential election and some of the comments we're hearing about NAFTA being torn up.
The Honourable Minister of Trade.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The unfortunate thing in this whole process is that it's the length of time it's going to take. None of these appeals are done quickly, unfortunately. We have to go down this route as it's the only one available to us. We're working very closely with Port Hawkesbury Paper, working very closely with the federal government, which has been extremely supportive of Nova Scotia's position. Clearly, the United States Department of Commerce misunderstood how our Utility and Review Board works here in Nova Scotia when it comes to the setting of power rates. But as I said, this has been an expensive process to date, not only for Port Hawkesbury Paper. Taxpayers have been spending significant money on legal fees, and we will continue to defend Port Hawkesbury Paper's position and defend the position of the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Zachary James is an 8-year-old student at École Boisjoli with autism spectrum disorder. Last week, he was issued an indefinite suspension because the school says they need the support of a full-time aide and a plan from the IWK for Zachary to be in school. Today, the board upheld that suspension. Mr. Speaker, does the Minister of Education feel it's appropriate to suspend a student with autism because the school is under-resourced to meet the needs of that child?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. I'm certainly not prepared to discuss any particulars of that, but I will say that one of the things that is a priority for all of us in our schools is the safety not only of children who may be autistic, but every child in that school and every staff member who works there. And school boards work very hard to make sure that they have the supports in place to ensure that safety. In particular, with the supports that we give to students who have identified need, We certainly provide the board with funding to out of which they can hire teaching assistants, resource teachers, school psychologists, speech-language pathologists, and the board uses those dollars to make sure that they have the resources in place.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Respectfully, we can't keep blaming the board for every issue that comes. Otherwise, I'm not sure why we have a Department of Education. Zachary has autism. He acts out when he gets anxious, and he more easily gets anxious without an aid. The school knows this, and you know Zachary's father, Greg Janes, is with us in the gallery today, and he's been told by the school that it's his responsibility to find an aid and to find the funding for an aid and to find a plan from the IWK. Since when did it become the parents' responsibilities to find support for their students in the school? And I will table the letter from the school, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, isn't it the responsibility of the school, the board, and the Department of Education to ensure that students have the resources they need to be in school when, in fact, children are required by law to be at class?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just to clarify so that the member and others can clearly understand, I understand the circumstance. I understand that the family has been working with the school and the school board. But to get matters clear as to who does the funding, the department provides the funding to the boards. The boards make the decision how they use that funding to support every student in every class in every school.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On April 29th, I asked the minister responsible for NSBI to explain the six-month delay with the EastLink Fund. The minister replied that NSBI has been working with CRTC to complete the necessary certification. Well, Mr. Speaker, it turns out that CRTC granted conditional approval last October 19th, and at that time, NSBI was asked to provide additional documents in order for full approval to be granted. I'll table that. So can the minister please explain why CRTC's request of October 19th was ignored until April 2016?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, NSBI continues to work with CRTC. I've indicated to my colleague, both in estimates and previous question period questions, that they anticipate that the appropriate procedures will be in place by the end of May, and at that time, able to take applications.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm getting pretty tired of hearing the same old rhetoric over and over again, when in fact the industry knows that this CRTC gave conditional approval, and this is creating serious problems for Nova Scotia's already stymied film and television industry. One example is Studio Black, a miniseries of African Nova Scotian stories. CBC ran the first season and ordered a second season, which is highly prestigious, Mr. Speaker. But the window of opportunity for this and other local production companies with defined shooting schedules is quickly closing. So my question, again, for the minister, after 6 months of dragging their feet inexplicably, can the minister please inform the House precisely when the EastLink Fund will be ready to receive applications from Nova Scotia's television community?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Interesting to hear my colleague comment about going around and round in circles. I think that's the conclusion that many would draw. I've answered the question. NSBI is working with CRTC. There was conditions attached to the conditional approval that my colleague references. They continue to work, Mr. Speaker, and they've indicated to me that the fund will be open to applications by the end of May. That's the answer.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. On May 1st, the Minister attended the Hike for Hospice in Kentville and said in an announcement there that the announcement for the new hospice was very close. The Minister also said the memorandum of agreement with the Valley Hospice Foundation will be signed soon, and I will table those quotes for the Minister. My question for the Minister is this. Would the Minister clarify what very close means for those people who have worked tirelessly to establish the hospice? For example, does very close mean this spring?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased that the Valley Hospice Society is working very closely with the Nova Scotia Health Authority. I know that the memorandum, the draft, is going back and forth. And I think it's very important that the right deal for the hospice and the province is put in place. I think we have a signed deal with the Halifax Hospice, and it took some time to work out, but I think it's a great deal for the province and for Halifax Hospice.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the issues has been this MOU, which I understand there was an MOU signed a number of years ago with the District Health Authority, which was then dissolved. But at that time, we were under the understanding that MOU would be honoured. Will the Minister now honour that MOU that was signed a number of years ago with the Health Authority?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm pleased to say that, in fact, it was the original memorandums of understanding with Valley Hospice and Halifax Hospice that are on the table and reaching a final conclusion, and that should happen very shortly.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Over the past number of sessions, we've asked the Minister of Health about government funding for Oncotype DX. It's a test for women diagnosed with breast cancer, and I've done it on four occasions, so qualify this one to be the fifth. I understand the government has finally decided to fund the test. So what remains to be unknown is why government has not chosen to announce the funding yet, so that all healthcare professionals and women diagnosed with breast cancer are aware of it so that they may access this important test.
The
Minister confirm that this test is being funded and given a timeline as to when he will make his official announcement.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for raising this important question and the importance of the test. And we all know that we can look at other jurisdictions as to how they are using the test, because in fact there are some very strict protocols around when this test should be used, when it will give the kind of information to make a decision about treatment, and I know that the Health Authority is doing that finalization now.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
All right, he hasn't told me, Mr. Speaker, when he's going to make the announcement, but he didn't say he wasn't, so that's a good sign for this one. We know the test can save money, save many women from needless chemotherapy, and help physicians decide on the most appropriate form of treatment. Such thing can prevent some women from undergoing procedures that add further stress and hardship to already stressful diagnosis. So we applaud the government for coming around and funding the test, we think, we hope. We could significantly improve women's experience with treatment and, secondly, save the healthcare system hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, Mr. Speaker, can the minister confirm that the test will be available in all areas of the province and give a detailed breakdown of when and where it will be available?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And one of the great advances that we have made in this province, in fact, is around dealing with breast cancer. About two decades ago, we had some of the worst outcomes in the country in terms of treatment. Today, we're usually around second place in the country in terms of outcomes, and that's due to the provincial program that was in place. A test like Oncotype DX, in fact, can probably even improve some of the outcomes that we hope and desire to put in place very shortly.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Question for the Minister of Transportation. Mr. Speaker, it was good of the Minister to come down to meet with the people of Deepdale last Friday. There was talk of a plan for that road. Mr. Speaker, bare-bones maintenance budgets will not fix the problems on this road or the many others across the province. Does the plan to fix Deepdale include a budget? Does it include a time frame?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I do truly thank the residents of Deepdale. I had the opportunity to speak with all that came out to the conversation we had at the beginning of the road. and it was important to hear their concerns and understand what exactly they're dealing with respect to the 6 kilometres that encompasses the Deepdale Road and the roads associated. Mr. Speaker, we don't have those specific numbers yet. Obviously, we made the commitment to the residents at that day that we would look at some of the short-term measures we could do specifically on their road, and Steve McDonald and Gerard Jessam are pulling that together. So obviously, when I have it, I'll share it with the member, and I made the commitment to let the residents of Deepdale know what we could do for this summer coming. Thanks.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I do remain hopeful, but in terms of specific numbers, I had asked the Minister questions and budget estimates, and he revealed that the government does not have a plan to use capital budgets for gravel roads. We know that the RIM budget is the same this year as it was last year, but it remains 25% less than it was in 2008-09. And the Minister said that being reactive was probably the best that the government could do in terms of roads like Deepdale. So, Mr. Speaker, my question is, why is the government neglecting dirt roads and the many Nova Scotians across the province, especially in rural areas, that are living on those roads?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And with respect to the capital allotment versus operational, what I had said was that that's never been accessed before. So it hasn't been our specific government. We're, in fact, that's what the message was to the residents and to the member opposite in estimates, and many of the members from all sides of the House who had asked. Having access to the capital plan and being able to put capital roads through the capital plan gives us an increased opportunity to address those roads. And, Mr. Speaker, with all due respect, the members talking about our government, everyone from Deepdale Road to every gravel road across the province say this is literally decades of neglect. This is not about the current government. This is about what's been done in the past, and we're going to change that, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question this time is for the Premier. Last week, the Canadian Network of Women's Shelters and Transition Houses reported 416 women and children affected by intimate partner violence reached out for shelter on a single day. Of those, 305 had to be turned away due to lack of capacity, and in the same report, nearly 76% of shelters said they had relied on food donations to meet the needs of women or assist them when leaving the shelter. I'll table that. So is the Premier satisfied with his government's funding levels that leave transition houses in Nova Scotia without enough beds or food to meet the needs of women and children?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Even though the Minister of Community Services and Status of Women is not here today, I want to thank her for the tremendous work that she's been doing, not only as the Minister, but prior to coming to this House, working with our partners across this province. Mr. Speaker, I think quite frankly, the question is offensive to everyone who in the right mind would suggest that anyone would be okay with anyone being abused in any circumstance across our province or indeed across our country. Of course, we're going to continue to work with our partners to ensure that we provide those services to Nova Scotians, and we're going to continue to stand by women and children in this province and do the right thing to make sure that at least, Mr. Speaker, in their own homes they can feel safe and ensure that in this province, Mr. Speaker, it will be a priority of this government, and we'll continue to make sure that women and children are safe in this province.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I'd like to point out it's just a question, and this is, after all, question period. So in spite of the Liberal election promise to ensure women's centres, shelters and transition houses had the financial ability to make long-range plans to help vulnerable women and children, these organizations are facing a perfect storm of increasingly complex needs of service users plus stagnant government funding. So my question for the Premier is this. How much time and effort does the Premier expect not-for-profit organizations to spend on fundraising versus providing services to these vulnerable clients?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank our partners across this province who have been working with our government, Mr. Speaker. I want to tell you, Mr. Speaker, they'll spend less time fundraising under this government than they did under that government after the cuts that took place to women and children in this province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Finance. 3 years ago, the Auditor General recommended that the Department of Finance tell all provincial agencies, boards and commissions to evaluate their processes around approval of travel and other expenses. And 3 years later, the AG found this has not been completed. So I'd like to ask the Minister, Why hasn't this important recommendation been completed?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, when the member opposite raised questions about the update to the AG report, what I highlighted to him at that time, and I'll reiterate again, Mr. Speaker, is that the report that was recently released by the AG that provided an update on the various recommendations and the status of those recommendations was based on information from back in October or November of 2015, Mr. Speaker. I'm happy to report to the member opposite that there have been several advancements on a number of the items related to the Department of Finance and Treasury Board between the time that the Auditor General Office was using in October, November, and when they tabled the report more recently.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's not clear if the Minister is saying that this specific recommendation has been dealt with or not. So I'd like to give the Minister an opportunity to clarify that when he stands back up, because the Auditor General said it's not reasonable that this specific recommendation has not been completed. And this is a recommendation that's purely about ensuring taxpayer money is being used prudently. So it's a straightforward recommendation, and the Minister is quite right that the report that the AG was looking at was up to November 2015. If the Minister believes that specific recommendation has been implemented over the last few months, that's great news, and I just ask him to confirm that and table for this House when it has been completed. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, you know, I have to admit I agree with the member opposite with respect to the role of the AG's office and indeed the role of the government with respect to ensuring the integrity and the fiscal management of the province, Mr. Speaker. And I'd like to remind the member opposite that the success of this government and how we manage the provincial finances, Mr. Speaker, is demonstrated over the past number of years that we've been in office, Mr. Speaker. The way that we've been managing our finances, Mr. Speaker, have brought us back to a balanced budget that we were able to table earlier in the month. So, Mr. Speaker, I think our performance speaks for itself. Thank you.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Monsieur President, j'aimerais poser une question au ministre des Affaires acadiennes. Comme tout le monde le sait, depuis quelques années, le mandat des Affaires acadiennes, le bureau des Affaires acadiennes, a vraiment changé. Ça, c'est une décision du dernier gouvernement. Et on sait maintenant que le ministre des Affaires acadiennes en marge de faire faire une consultation sur le fonctionnement du bureau. Donc, j'aimerais peut-être demander au ministre qu'est-ce qu'il voit comme des changements qu'on pourrait avoir au bureau des Affaires acadiennes.
The Honourable Minister of Acadian Affairs.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur le Président, et merci à mon collègue de Argyle pour la question. C'est une question que l'ancien gouvernement NPD avait fait d'échange au Bureau des affaires acadiennes, l'avoir remis sous un autre département. Après cela que j'ai entendu de la communauté acadienne, il y avait des inquiétudes aussi de la Fédération acadienne Nouvelle-Écosse. Alors j'ai appointé un comité de 8 personnes qui est représentant et représentante des communautés acadiennes à travers de la province pour leur demander et pour eux à demander à leur communauté comment mieux avoir le bureau des affaires acadiennes pour servir la communauté. J'ai reçu le rapport. Je peux aussi indiquer que les membres représentants de la Fédération acadienne Nouvelle-Écosse ont rencontré avec moi-même et le premier ministre pour présenter leur demande aussi sur la loi sur les services en langue française et sur la structure du bureau. On est en train de faire la revue de ces demandes et du rapport, et une fois qu'on aura les décisions faites, je serai content de partager avec mon collègue et avec tout le monde de la Nouvelle-Écosse.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Je remercie le ministre de cette réponse-là. Mais dans le budget même, on a vu une diminution du budget même du Bureau des Affaires acadiens et même aux autres bureaux des Noirs et puis du Bureau celtique. Donc, j'aimerais demander peut-être au ministre, même qu'il va partager à quelque temps, c'est-à-dire dans quelques mois, quelques semaines, quand est-ce qu'on va voir un rapport final pour le Bureau des Affaires acadiens?
The Honourable Minister of Acadian Affairs.
Merci. Et le fait que la revue a pris place très proche du budget, c'est à cause de ça qu'il n'y avait pas le temps de mettre en place les recommandations qui avaient été faites. Mais je peux indiquer à mon collègue, j'ai déjà eu l'occasion de rencontrer avec la nouvelle ministre de Patrimoine Canada, l'honorable Mélanie Joly, une fois qu'elle était ici en Nouvelle-Écosse, pour lui parler des montants de fonds qui viennent ici en Nouvelle-Écosse, des défis qui prennent place dans nos communautés acadiennes avec l'anglicisation, le fait que nos communautés sont très rurales et éloignées l'un à l'autre. Et alors, j'espère que nous aurons certainement des meilleures réponses du gouvernement fédéral que nous avions reçues dans le passé. Mais je peux assurer le membre que c'est une question qui est très proche à mon cœur, la structure des affaires acadiennes, le fonctionnement de la loi sur les services en français. Et aussi vite que possible que nous aurons les réponses finales, nous allons les partager avec le membre et avec tous les gens de la Nouvelle-Écosse. Merci, M. le Président.
Très bien. The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of TIR. The City of Portland stands to gain from the operation of the Yarmouth Ferry Service. The City will make nearly $100,000 a year on the terminal fees alone, plus passengers and vehicle tariff, fuel licenses, parking, and the list goes on, Mr. Speaker. Yet, Mr. Speaker, somehow it is Nova Scotians who are already taking on all the financial risks associated with the ferry service, with the responsible not only or including the upgrading of the Portland terminal. Mr. Speaker, I ask the Minister, how can this be so?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. During estimates, a number of questions were back and forth from the member to myself, and during that time, he had said that he did support the ferry service, and we talked about the former Premier Daryl Dexter talking about how that was a significant mistake made at the Cabinet table of which that member was a part of. So, Mr. Speaker, I don't think I have to talk about the merits and the impact of his community, that region, the entire province, when the service was removed by his former government, Mr. Speaker. Again, as we've said many times, we've got the right operator in place, Mr. Speaker. This is the deal that we'll see stability on that important transportation link. We'll see lots of Americans bring their tourism dollars here and spend it right here in the province, and we'll benefit from that, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, but apparently, again, yoga class must have been cancelled last night because I have the angry minister. Mr. Speaker, even though Nova Scotia has taken on all the risks, this government has decided to leave it to Bay Ferries to work out the agreement with the City of Portland, therefore negotiating on our behalf. It is a company that knows the province will make up any cash deficiencies that exist. Mr. Speaker, I ask the minister, why has he not been part of the negotiations with the City of Portland when tens, I repeat, tens of millions of taxpayers' dollars are going on the line?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll correct the member opposite. I actually was at yoga last night. Thank you very much. That's why I am calm, Mr. Speaker. Look, the reality is that, look, I won't ask for my money back, Honourable Member. The reality is that Mark McDonald is a pro. He's got a relationship, experience, a vested interest with the City of Portland. Despite what the opposition will try to put out there in terms of their narrative that they want to set up, the City of Portland is a full supporter, a partner here with us. This is an important service for the people of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. They support this service because they want it to work. Mark McDonald's in this for the right reasons, and Mr. Speaker, despite what the opposition's saying and what they're trying to spin out there, this will be a success and a good benefit for the people of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, a question for the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, we've heard the Minister of Justice say that she values and the government values the Law Reform Commission. But yet in the budget we see their funding has been completely eliminated. It was also stated, Mr. Speaker, by the Minister that the Law Reform Commission was given a year's notice. We have learned that's not the case. And I'm seeing members saying, yes, it was. Talk to the Law Reform Commission, Mr. Speaker, and they will tell you that is not the case. So my question, does the minister feel it is fair to make these comments about an organization which has a real history of providing valuable service to our province?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the opportunity to speak about this subject again, and I know it's an important issue. Certainly over the years, I acknowledge there's been wonderful work done from the Law Reform Commission, and the change in our budget does not reflect the fact that we value the information we've received from them. We now have in the Department of Justice, Mr. Speaker, approximately 90 lawyers. That's three times what it was 20 years ago. There's a lot of research that happens within the Department of Justice now as well, so we hope to be able to continue a lot of the research work that's been going on. To your question, Mr. Speaker, just to answer the question about the year, it was certainly a decision made a year ago. Perhaps they were spoken to in June. Might it have been June? So perhaps we're talking about a matter of a few months difference. So we might be able to discuss that. I believe, my understanding was they had a year, but if it wasn't a full year from the time they were notified, it was close to it.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't want to take shots at the lawyers working at Justice, but I know we had another issue similar to this one, where I know it was also said, I think, that by the department that there's only a couple of provinces with these law reform commissions, and we know that that's not the case. So, I think about the value in terms of dollars. Like, the government sees this organization as a cost to the province. We look at all their impact on the legal status of the child, grandparent, grandchild access, maintenance enforcement obligations, reports over the years that have actually become part of our laws in the province. And I think, there's lawyers contributing their time to this organization free of charge. Mr. Speaker, did the minister do a cost-benefit analysis on the value that her department and our province is getting for the Law Reform Commission before eliminating the funding?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much. And again, Mr. Speaker, it is important to talk about this. I want to reiterate that the Department of Justice is providing space and support. So all of the administrative space and support that they need is in place in our department. So that's an in-kind contribution of thousands of dollars. And we have encouraged them to seek funding from other sources. I know that there are other means, other foundations that some are providing a little bit of money. And we provided time for them to make those requests. So, Mr. Speaker, it is our hope that they will find other funders, that with our in-kind contribution, they will continue to operate.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Environment. I know that the Premier made a promise to Nova Scotia to make Nova Scotia the most open and transparent province in Canada, yet when it comes to environmental policy, many Nova Scotians feel that meaningful citizen engagement is compromised by a lack of access to information. So I'd ask the Minister, what's her department doing to ensure that the government keeps its promise to be the most open and transparent government in Canada?
The Honourable Minister of Environment. Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that you now leave the chair and that the House resolve itself into a committee on supply.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and it gives me great pleasure to rise and have a few moments of discussion on the estimates and the debates that are taking place in the House of Assembly these days. Members of this government have talked time and time again about how great this budget is for Nova Scotians, what a great job they've done at balancing the budget, and how they're making life better for all Nova Scotians. Well, Mr. Speaker, my question today for you and for all the members of the House is, what does this budget do for Cape Breton? What does it make, how does it